Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Happy Project podcast. And my name is Becky. Sitting over here is Cedric Sky City, who is matching with the background. The background of our house here. And you're listening to the Happy Project podcast.
Hello, everyone.
I'm sorry. I didn't know if I had to continue or leave you a little space to talk.
Do you want to start that over?
Yeah, that was really bad. I'm all nervous now. You made me nervous.
Just be cool. Just be straight.
I can't. My name is Becky, and sitting across the table here is Cedric Sky City.
Hello, everyone.
Most people have not heard our first entry. This is our second intro, and it's not doing much better than the first one.
A little bit better.
This is great, though, because people are seeing real-time our communication with each other, which has something to do with our episode today.
Just a little bit.
I have a question for you, Cooks. Do you consider yourself a good communicator?
No.
No. I thought that was going to go a little bit differently. You were going to say yes, and I was going to say, oh, in what ways? And then you would tell us what ways.
No, I could tell you the opposite. Well, I feel like I can communicate in a sense of if there's something that I'm confident in, something that I know how to communicate, or something that I'm very familiar with, I feel like I'm better at communicating. But when it comes to communicating how I really feel or communicating, I don't know, if I'm like really upset or frustrated about something, it's hard for me to get it out.
It's hard for everybody.
Some people are very good.
I mean, if you're really mad though, because it will usually come out wrong.
Well, I'm talking like even just like simple agitation or frustration. Like I feel like I'm not that great of a communicator in that way. I feel like I can use a lot of work.
How about this? What makes a good communicator?
I think someone who can express their thoughts clearly in a way that the other person or party understands and receives it and can understand where you're coming from.
Ooh.
Yeah, so it's not exactly just articulation per se, but it's the other party understanding.
Oh!
Did I get something right?
Yes, that was such a beautiful description of communication. Wow, you communicated that very well to me.
Well, that's probably because I got my undergrad. Well, part of my degree was in organizational communication.
All right, stop showing off. No, but it reminded me of a class I took where it was communications. That was what the class was called. And I distinctly remember the professor was asking us, what is communication? And then she said, because somebody was like, oh, communication is being able to put your thoughts into words well. Oh, it's being able to present well and all of these things. And she was like, no, communication is about expressing what you're trying to say in a way that the other party understands. Mm. So it might not even have anything to do with your fancy words or your presentation or even the language you're speaking. It's all how you get the meaning across to the other party.
Right. The most articulate, greatest orator in the world, if they're in front of kids and they can't break things down in a way that kids understand, then in that situation, I feel like it's not effective communication.
Oh, Cooks.
Man, you know, I'm on fire today.
I know. You said you weren't a good communicator, but you're so great right now.
Yeah.
That was nice.
It's probably going to go downhill from here.
The bar is set, everybody. It's up to here. Well, the reason why I'm asking these questions is because today we're going to talk about communication in relationships where the two individuals speak different languages. Either they speak different languages as in, you know, I only speak Korean and you only speak English. How are we supposed to communicate? Or in the case of a couple that I speak Korean, you speak French, but our second language is English. So we communicate with each other in our second languages. And so there are many couples, of course, like that, who are making it work, making relationships work like this. But from our own experiences, having grown up in homes where our parents spoke, their mother tongues were not the same.
Right.
Could you say mother tongue for your dad too? Oh, I guess you could.
Yeah.
You're right.
Has nothing to do with the actual like mother.
Yeah.
Like you're original.
Right. Okay. Original language. it was not the same.
Your father tongue.
And we saw firsthand what that can look like and grow up in that kind of experience. And so we just wanted to talk a little bit about that and ask the question and kind of explore this question. Do we think it's necessary to be able to communicate fluently in the same language?
Mm. That's a good question. I think before we even attempt to dive into like answering that with our opinions and whatever we feel like we've researched over the years, what is fluency? What is language fluency?
Wow, because you're really doing great in this episode.
Well, no, seriously, because... Yeah. Whenever you ask someone, are you fluent? Like, for example, people have asked you, are you fluent in Korean? Or if they say, hey, is Becky fluent in Korean? I'll be the first to say yes.
Oh.
Yeah, she's very fluent. But then sometimes you'll say yes, and depending on the context, sometimes you'll even say I'm not that fluent. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, so we're judging the same language ability and the ability to communicate in Korean differently. It's subjective. And I think fluency... to a certain degree, is subjective because there is no hard line, I think, in terms of you cross this line, you become fluent. I think it's more it bringing into question the answer of, like, what does communication mean? I think fluency has that same nuance of, well, as long as you're able to communicate in a way that the other party understands, then that means you have some degree of fluency. That's what I think fluency is. Now, I'm not a language expert, and feel free to correct me, anyone out there who is a linguist, but that is my idea of fluency.
I think that's true.
Right.
Because the thing is, you could be like, obviously not used in the same term of fluent in a specific language, but be like, oh, I'm fluent in today's slang. I get it. I know all the lingos, as the kids say.
Right.
And you could be fluent in the slang. So maybe you're speaking to certain age groups. You guys totally get each other.
Right.
But maybe you're trying to speak to other age groups and it's like, well, I don't know what you're trying to say. I can't communicate with you. There's no fluency existing there. Is that
agreed.
Like that?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, that's what I think fluency is. Maybe not in totality, but I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about relationships and is it required for there to be fluency, I think to a certain degree, yeah, for it to work effectively. Unless both parties are just like the most down-to-earth people and they just like, whatever happens, happens. We love each other, whether we can communicate to each other or not. You know, there are very few couples, I believe, out there that exist like that. But for most people who have a desire to communicate and the need as a human being to be understood, I think there needs to be some level of fluency. Whether it's like totally fluent or just, you know, to a point where you can understand. And I've seen, at least in my experiences with my parents, I've seen that come into play in that my dad didn't speak Korean. I don't even know how much Korean he knew. I'm sure he knew probably how to greet. And that's, you know, and very few like words outside of that. But I've never heard him speak anything in Korean from my memory. And my mom, I would even consider her to be semi-fluent in English. She's not even, I would say, fluent. And that's a whole nother story for another day because she's lived in America for over half of her life, you know. But yeah, I've seen their relationship work still because my mom, she was semi-fluent in English. My dad was obviously fluent in English and they made it work because they were able to understand each other. That didn't come without challenges, you know. But yeah, I think they were able to make it work. So yes, at least semi-fluency can work, in my opinion.
I think we need to steer a little bit away from terms like fluency too, because the definition we're using is a bit subjective, as opposed to the usual concept of fluency, like full mastery, command of a certain language. Because I think about communication, because communication is obviously not even just about language. It's your facial expressions,
right?
Or it's being able to, you know, almost transcend written or spoken word to get something across. You know someone so well that you give them a certain look you're communicating something to them, they get it. So it's this give and take that can exist in all different kinds of levels. But coming back to that question about, is it important to have this ability to communicate? I absolutely, hands down, say yes, in the context of what we are saying, of what communication means, this give and take of information. Because I think what happens a lot of times, like, why do we have a desire to communicate with somebody, right? We have this desire to communicate because, one, we're trying to show them who we are. And these are the vehicles, either movement, expression, language, writing, the vehicles we use to show an individual something about ourselves so they can see us fully, so we can be seen. And only by being seen and understood can we really connect and be loved. And I think that's one reason for communication. And I think another reason, and this is something that I feel like has played a lot in relationships, especially in the past, where one person didn't speak the same language, is a sense of power and control. Because how much easier it is to keep somebody kind of powerless when nobody's hearing you or understanding what you're saying. You're in a society or community where nobody understands you whatsoever. You're not able to communicate with the outside world. So you are powerless then. So this is why communication is so vital. It's not just about trying to prove a point or be like, I like this, I don't like this, you should understand that. But it's also in a way, it gives yourself a sense of power and respect in a relationship, which are things that are important to feel equal footing with the other person.
Yeah, so you're actually going deep with the concept of communication and language. I mean, because on the surface, it is about just like the words that you say and how you convey it and making sure the other person understands. But on the bottom, there's so many other nuances to that. Like you said, like the whole power thing, I didn't even really think about.
I just thought about it right now because I was thinking like, why do sometimes discussions get out of control? And I'm not even just talking about in multilingual homes, even with a partner who speaks the same language as you, why do these discussions get out of control? Because you feel out of control. You feel powerless. You can't express. They're not getting it. Makes you upset. So you resort to a different form of communication to get the point across.
Like punching a wall.
Exactly, right? You don't get it. Bang. Now do you get it? I had to resort to this, right? Because it's a sense you feel powerless and frustrated to get this across. So communication is so vital in relationships. And now let's pull it more into multilingual homes, okay? Or relationships where, kind of as I described earlier, different languages, right? What might be some, I guess, some things to consider seriously, especially if you're in a relationship with somebody who doesn't speak your language, you don't speak their language, or you're sharing a second language and communicating in that. What would be some things that you need to consider?
Man, well, that's a very general question. But that's a good question. I think one of the things that you should consider is, well, I guess for both people to consider is how willing are you to adapt to each other's language, right? So like, is one partner ready or willing to learn the other partner's language? And if not, are you okay to accept the, I guess, the limitations of how you'll be able to communicate verbally? I think that's one thing to consider. Because I think a lot of, I know we see this a lot with especially the older generation, Korean Americans who have immigrated into the States, for example. Like, I think in the 70s and 80s and even 90s, a lot of times when you have, for example, a Korean wife and an American husband, most of the time I've seen in my experience that the Korean wife will be the one to have to learn English.
Yes.
I've barely ever seen a Korean husband or a non-Korean husband try to learn Korean. And I'm not dogging that at all, because every situation is different. Plus, I mean, there is that added element of the wife is in America. So I understand that. But when it comes to just the home and just being able to communicate, it's been my experience. And this, you know, my dad's included in that. Like, you know, I don't remember seeing my dad learn, you know, taking English or Korean classes. Yeah, so I think that is something to consider, and I guess the couple would have to agree upon either through talking that out or just there has to be some sort of mutual understanding that mm-hmm. this is how it's going to be. This is how we're going to have to learn to communicate with
and
each other.
And have to be okay with that.
Yeah.
Right? And I think some people, maybe it is expressed that way and they're like, we're okay with that.
Right.
And move forward with it. But I feel like a lot of times, especially with an older generation, that mutual expectation and understanding didn't exist. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times there was a disbalance in this, I guess, dynamic of respect or power or in the society that you're in. Because I know from my own experiences of people that I've met, oftentimes, oh, I can't communicate with my American husband who doesn't speak any Korean at all. So I'm just going to keep my words down and I'm just not going to tell them what I want. I'm not going to try to get a job because I don't want to make them look bad. I'm not going to go further my education because I don't want people talking like, oh, wow, this guy, his wife can't even speak English. Like there's this kind of perspective that can exist from somebody who doesn't speak the language fluently of the partner who has more respect or power in the society.
Yeah.
So I do think it is really important to be able to have a mutual understanding. Hey, this is how it is. And you know what? This is not a deal breaker. Let's talk about that. However right. we choose to.
Right.
Another thing I think that's important with this communication factor is that language words are simply the vehicles of the meaning that we're trying to say,
mm-hmm.
right? So words themselves, it's just the way we shape our mouth. It's just a certain combination of sounds that we stuffed together and said, this word is English and it means house. And this is what a house is. But I mean, really like house, it's just a sound, right? It doesn't really have any impact itself. It's the meaning behind the word.
Right.
So certain words carry certain meanings. And along with those meanings come connotations and those nuances, the contexts. To kind of give an example, like say you grow up in a culture community where everyone celebrates Christmas and loves Christmas, and growing up everyone knew Christmas was like the thing and you all decorated and you love Christmas. So when you hear the word Christmas, certain feeling comes to mind, right? Oh, that
certain smells.
Oh yeah. By the way,
yeah, all the senses
I love
are triggered.
Christmas. I'm already thinking mm-hmm. about it. But Christmas, so you have this connotation, this context existing in the word itself. Christmas. Wow. So you feel that. Then you have your partner who never grew up around Christmas, who never had this kind of holiday cheer, never thinks about Santa Claus or presents or what a Christmas is like. Don't even know what that is. They don't even care. And then you're just like, Merry Christmas. And you're trying to convey this warmth and great spirit. And the other person's like, I don't even care. Like, mm-hmm. what is that? That can be really disappointing because the communication of what you're trying to convey is not coming across simply because the other person does not have the context that exists behind your years in history of Christmas and what it means to you. And so this is another thing to keep in mind. Right? Because when you are in interracial or international relationships and interracial relationships where you speak a different language or have a different context growing up, those kind of subtle meanings and nuances can sometimes just not exist.
Right.
Sometimes we're talking about pop culture references or jokes that you shared. Mm-hmm. Everyone said these jokes when they were young kids, and now you're trying to ha 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 bring it back, nostalgia. Their person's like, what? What? I don't get that. And so there's a kind of, it can sound negative, but gaps or holes in this context that is supposed to be bringing you closer together. So that is something that could also be.
Right. That could also be, I was waiting for something.
What would you like to communicate after that?
Well, I know it's funny because I would just like to say that it's not even a racial thing. I think it's more of a linguistic mm-hmm. and cultural thing mm-hmm, because mm-hmm. you could be a Korean American that doesn't speak Korean, and true. You could be a Korean from Korea being in a relationship, and you could still have the same exact problem. So mm-hmm, it transcends just your racial or ethnic identity.
Mm-hmm,
it's
mm-hmm.
it is just the culture. And in addition, another consideration is language is powerful in that it's, yeah, on the surface, it's a series of words and phrases that mean a certain something, right?
Mm-hmm.
We assign meaning to it, but on a deeper level, like how you view life, or language has a big part in how you view life. And so one thing to consider is, like, for example, if you're fluent in Korean, you're going to view life a certain way versus if you're fluent in English, because all of that is just built into the language. And I have a general understanding of that, because when I switch to my like Korean brain, I look at life and I look at people differently. We always talk about like when it's like an older Korean gentleman or even an older Korean woman, I look at them differently. Especially like if I know that they don't speak English, they speak Korean only, like I view them a certain way, I interact with them a certain way versus someone who is the same age, American, who speaks English. I don't feel that, I look at them differently. I can treat them a little different. I still treat them with respect, but I can feel okay with being a little more casual. So like how you view life comes through your language, especially with Korean. Because there's honorifics and the casual like differences in the languages.
Yeah.
And that'll affect how you view and interact with people.
Yeah.
So that's another just sort of a deeper level thing to consider in this
relationship. It's really true, because culture is baked into language. I don't think you can really separate the two in most cases. And so you might not understand, let's say your spouse does something a certain way, views people a certain way, says certain things, and you're like, why do you think that way? I don't get it. But they're not able to communicate to you why they do that in their own mother tongue. Then it can be gaps of understanding, and you might just have to accept like, all right, I just don't get it.
Yeah.
You know, and you can lay it down to, well, yeah, it's cultural differences. But I think some ways to bridge cultural differences is to understand the language itself, because culture and language are so closely tied together.
Right.
Yeah, because this was something that I also noticed growing up, that there are many aspects of my mom, the way she thought, the things she did, you know, how she spoke to us, that when I was growing up and didn't speak Korean fluently, I would be very like sometimes blindsided, or it's just like, What is the point of this? And then as I get older, it's not even just a matter of maturing and living in Korea. It's specifically understanding the language, where you get some things and be like, I see now what you were trying to say. I just didn't get it before.
Right.
And so language is very vital in trying to peel back those layers of misunderstanding.
Yeah. So it would be very beneficial in that context to be able to communicate the same language, or to maybe even make an attempt to perhaps understand your partner's language, which is far easier said than done.
Mm.
But there are those nuances that you'll be able to understand better if that is the case. Now, again, if that isn't the case with certain couples where it's only one partner that's learning the other language and they're communicating through that language, I'm not throwing shade. But what I am saying is there are benefits to speaking the same language.
Yeah, entirely. You can even feel this just when you're trying to read books that have been translated to English, but it is missing the heart. Like, to give an example, I really try to read Crime and Punishment. No, actually, I liked Crime and Punishment. I tried to read some, you know, War and Peace. I was trying to read War and Peace, and I was trying to read Anna Karenina. Oh boy. Anyway, sorry to my Russian speaking listeners. So I was trying to read these two books, and I have tried for years. And you know, my friends who speak Russian, they just love these novels. They rave up. It's so beautiful. The writing, it's so meaningful. And I'm bogged down by the words. I can't quite feel that visceral gut feeling or attraction to these novels. And I was really asking, like, how can I appreciate Russian literature more? How can I really understand and love it? And you know what the universal response was? Learn Russian. Because it's something that's in the language. It's hard to grasp it. I think it's different, you know, if I say to you, oh, well, I need, and it's Chinese, you know what I'm saying. I love you. But the feeling would be so much different if I say to you, I love you, or 사랑해, right? Because there's that visceral attraction attached to the words themselves.
Right.
So, yeah, that is something to keep in mind.
Right.
When it comes to these multilingual homes. Following up on top of that, how about relatives? More often than not, when you are in these cross-cultural, multilingual families or relationships, maybe your side of the family only speaks English, their side of the family only speaks Korean, and maybe you and your partner speak a mutual language, but what about when you spend time with your relatives? There's inevitably going to be a language barrier. And having healthy relationships with your spouse's family is really a great blessing, mm-hmm. I think. But when there's a language barrier that exists, it's something that you have to consider. Am I going to be able to be close to Haimoni? Am I going to be able to take out my niece and nephew and just hang out together as auntie and, you know, niece? I don't know. Those are things that I consider, actually. Right. Not that we have that problem.
No, I don't think we would have that problem, of course. But that is another thing. I remember just growing up on both sides, like us going to my dad's side for Christmas time. Mm. And it's all just the Black family, just having a good time. Mm-hmm. And my mom is literally like the only Asian, you know, because it's mostly like, you know, just a Black family. Mm-hmm. And then my mom, is just there. And like, she wasn't really, she never felt comfortable, understandably, like in a sense of like, she doesn't know how to communicate with them or what to say. Mm-hmm, so it was always very basic. And like, my family just loved on her and they're very kind, but, it never really went beyond that point. They knew that my mom was the one that would bring like egg rolls. Sometimes my mom would just make egg rolls, like Korean style egg rolls and bring it to the like family events. I didn't go beyond that from what I remember. And there were times where my mom's family would get together growing up. My dad was just, he was just chilling, you know? And they tried to communicate. And I think they communicated on the most basic level. Mm. But it didn't go beyond, you know, deep conversations or anything like that. So, yeah, I was able to see sort of both dynamics on each side. Now it worked. Luckily, like, both sides of the family accepted the other. Mm-hmm. But I could only imagine, like, just if my dad was able to communicate even more in Korean, like, just how crazier, you know, those times could have been.
Yeah.
Like, with them interacting.
Yeah. But even in this kind of case where you don't go past any deep conversation, that is not equal to the amount of love and respect you can have for that individual.
Totally.
Because language does not go hand in hand with being able to express love to somebody. That is something that we do want to emphasize.
Yeah.
Just a couple other things, because I really don't want to just be like, these are things, bad things, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, just being very honest about it. And then we can move on to what has been our own experiences. But another thing that comes to mind is when you say you're living in the country of your spouse and they only speak one language there, and you don't speak that language, inevitably you end up relying on your spouse, right? Even for very basic things, grocery shopping, where all the food is written in a different language, or opening a bank. You can't open a bank account because nobody is speaking your language. Or, you know, these basic skills, making phone calls can even become a matter of stress. Call comes, should I answer it? Should I not? Someone knocks on the door, should I answer the door? I don't know. Because if you're not speaking that person's language, of course, you can feel a little bit lost. And so this event depends on the individual person. Some people are okay with that. Hey, I'm okay taking all of these responsibilities. Just rely on me. And that person might feel totally okay. Like, hey, I don't need to have all this freedom to move around because I want to be with you anyway. But I think that sometimes it can come out inside you, like maybe feeling a little resentful or feeling a little bit like burdensome. These are other things that I feel like had happened to me previously when I didn't speak Korean fluently, but I was living here, and this was like years back, and I had my ex and he was doing everything for me. Mm-hmm. And then after we broke up, suddenly I realized like, wow, there's so many like basic things I can't do because he just did everything for me because of the language barrier. Mm-hmm. And so after that, I was like, come on, Becky, gird your loins. And is that what they say?
I don't know. Right? Anyone says that.
Like right
we're
before,
gonna gird our loins
right before you go into battle, you know. Gird your loins. I really hope that's what it means and not something weird. And then just okay, I'm gonna do it, and then you learn through trial and error. Mm-hmm. But you don't have anyone to rely on anymore. But when you're in that relationship and you don't feel obligated, you know, they'll do everything for me. This is another thing,
right?
Gird your loins and move on.
So another thing that that we can consider when talking about this, especially if you are in a household with kids, is how the kids, I guess, speak the language or not speak the language, right? Like in the example of my household growing up, we spoke mostly English, me and my sister, but my mom spoke to us in Korean, but we spoke to her in English. Mm. but we were more obviously comfortable in English because that was our native tongue. So, yeah.
Your mother tongue, your son tongue, and daughter tongue.
Right. But, you know, we found a way to communicate with my mom in a way that it just worked. Whereas I know a lot of kids and people growing up, hindsight, looking back to their childhood, they might feel like they weren't able to communicate with their parents or have a sense of understanding because it's like, oh, my mom can't speak English well, or she just doesn't get me. So I know that that is a real thing. I don't know. Have you experienced that growing up? Or
yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. My mom, I would say she's similar to your mom in her English speaking ability.
No, she's definitely better.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
She's definitely better.
It's because your mom always speaks to us in Korean. Mm-hmm. I haven't really...
Yeah. Like I said, my mom is, she's basic level fluent and yeah, that's about it.
You know,
she really did try.
But. My dad is, because he's a very academic type. Yeah. So my mom will pick up these really random, you know, high level vocabulary terms, and then she'll just text them, drop them in the conversation here and there. We're like, Mom, where did you learn that word? Mm-hmm. Like, it's funny because it's just very like not very commonly used English vocabulary, but my mom she's very clever and she'll just pick them up and she'll use them right. Mm-hmm. And then my sisters and I have a separate chat. We're like, did you just see what mom dropped in there? And then we'll be like, wow, impressed. But I mean, that's language, right? Because you just parrot what you hear and use that. So I guess you could say my mom is a perfect blend of very high-end English, low-end English. So she's somewhere rocketing back and forth between those.
Yeah, it's better than me. I'm like low-end and kind of like mid-level English. So
you're just slowly chugging along, right? My mom's a bullet train with occasional very sudden stops.
Yeah.
But it is true, like with growing up, because my mom, I felt like sometimes like I just couldn't say what I wanted to say. But for me, I never really equated it to because of not speaking English well or not speaking Korean well. I think I just felt like we just didn't get each other. Mm-hmm. But I never equated it to language per se. And then as I got older, then I realized suddenly speaking Korean, like, wow, my mom's so funny and she's very thoughtful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's got reasons behind what she's doing.
Right. You know, one thing that I'll say is I do remember a period of time. I don't know how long this lasted, but when I was probably early teens, maybe towards the late teens, like I think I sort of looked down on my mom in a sense of, I don't know. I wouldn't say that I thought my mom wasn't smart, but when it came to speaking English, I just felt like there are a lot of things that she didn't get or wouldn't understand. And I just sort of, thinking back to it now, it's like, yeah, I did have those moments in my arrogance of, you know, youth. But now that I look back, I realize my mom is far more intelligent than I had originally thought as a teenager, because I didn't understand that your ability to speak one language doesn't equate to intelligence.
Absolutely.
And again, not that my mom would ever listen to this, but it's not that I thought she was stupid or she was just of low intelligence, but I just thought that she wasn't as intelligent as she really was and is. Mm-hmm. And I remember in my 20s that, you know, after I was sort of out of the house, but I was still, you know, around, I would see her often. She would always ask me to talk to her. Mm-hmm. Like, she really wanted me to just let her know how I was feeling about stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was always kind of weird to me. Like, you know, it's okay. I would just
keep it very surface. You don't talk about your feelings?
I didn't. Uh-huh. But she wanted me to. And I realized that was just her desire to communicate with her son that I didn't really, I guess, capitalize on at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is something that everyone should take away from this episode if you didn't hear anything else. Your ability to speak a certain language does not equate your ability to communicate with somebody or your intelligence level, your emotional intelligence, and your love and respect for an individual. The level of language that you speak does not have to be a barrier to communicating those things.
Yeah.
Right. So this is something I think also important to keep in mind if you're in a relationship where you guys don't speak the same language or you don't have a fluent second language together, is to remember that. Because whether we like to say it out loud or not, sometimes you can harbor or grow a growing sense of like, my partner's just not going to get it. So why do I even bother inviting her to come watch this movie with me? And she's not going to understand anyway. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like this subtle sense of looking down a little bit or cutting you out of certain aspects of your life. But if you mutually understand and that person's like, you know what, actually, I don't want to watch the movie anyway. Go and just have fun. And you can go without feeling like you're looking down or being left out of the conversation. Then I think that's healthy.
Yeah.
But that's in the case of all things. But yeah, language. Remember this, guys, what we just said 10 seconds ago. Okay. So the last thing I wanted to bring up was the issue of conflict resolution. Conflict resolution is in itself not, you know, the easiest thing for everybody. And there's a whole lot of factors for that. But of course, it ultimately comes down to communication, I think. And we alluded a little bit to this at the beginning where it's like, where you can't communicate yourself and then it escalates and it explodes, right? And sometimes it comes to fisticuffs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people need to use that word more often these days. You know, fisticuffs?
No, oh. I've never.
It's kind of
long. I'm telling you, I'm mid-level, low-level vocabulary.
No, it's not about that. It's kind of along the era of gird your loins. They're pretty much around, I think, the same time era. Anyway, before, you know, things erupt like that, you have to have good conflict resolution. But in a household where you grow up with two parents who are not communicating well, maybe because of language differences, you as a child can watch that, and that's how you learn conflict resolution. So to give an example, in our home, because of language barriers and cultural miscommunications, sometimes things erupted. And then growing up, you know, thankfully now I haven't absorbed that, or I've worked through my issues, knock on wood, but I could grow up easily thinking like, well, that's how you resolve conflict. You have to shout and get your point across. But in reality, I mean, conflict resolution doesn't have to be that way. But that's because that's the result of two people speaking different languages, trying to work through issues.
Mm-hmm.
That was in my case.
Yeah. My case was, for the most part, my parents handled conflict behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. But there were times, and I don't know if my mom remembers this, but there were times where, you know, they had some conflicts in front of me and my sister.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one time, oh God, I shouldn't say this. Mm-hmm. Remember one time I was like really young. I was like elementary school. Remember my mom was so mad. And I feel like it was probably because I guess there was just like miscommunication. They weren't able to communicate with each other. I remember she like threw like these empty, my dad used to drink Diet Coke like every day.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably where I get my Coke Zero
thing
from. But yeah, and so she took these cans and like threw it at him. I remember that. Uh-huh. And my dad didn't do anything. He just like, I think my dad at that point knew that he just needed to let her calm down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just remember him just like not really responding.
Mm-hmm.
I remember he was probably upset, frustrated, but yeah. So outside of that, I think they handled conflict behind closed doors. And I remember whenever they would be upset at each other, they'd probably talk, argue, go their separate ways for a little bit. And then I remember my mom always, because my dad was just in the room, my mom would always go to the room and then close doors, no yelling or anything, no tense. They're just like talking it out. Again, I don't know what really went on behind there.
Maybe
this is just my memory.
At each other. Maybe it was like whispered.
Right, it could have been. But then they eventually resolved it. That's what I remember. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were some big moments. But I don't remember my parents fighting a lot, you know.
That's healthy. I think that's great. I think, you know, maybe sometimes if you have like this inability to communicate with each other, sometimes people just be like, you know, I'm just not going to talk to you. Then there's no conflict resolution happening, right? So the point of this is just there should be healthy conflict resolution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's my conclusion. But as we know, language and communication. Important. Okay, I really want to come around full circle because I don't want to think people are like, oh, you don't believe in multilingual relationships. But that is not at all what we're saying. And we are the product of those kind of relationships. And I mean, I hope we're healthy, happy individuals, right?
Yeah.
Who found each other.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be the first to say that I'm actually an advocate because people, whenever they ask me, like, how'd your parents communicate? Mm-hmm. Like, if they couldn't, like, speak each other's language. I would always respond, they just made it happen.
Yeah.
And it worked well for them. And so that's how I learned that it goes beyond just words and understanding words. It's mm-hmm. also the nonverbals. It's the way you communicate, yeah. Like physically, it's what you do and how you receive, like different forms of communication. So for me, I think it can work. I do think that there are, again, benefits to obviously speaking the same language that you can't get without speaking the language, but that's not a requirement. So I'm totally for the camp of, well, if you guys agree to, you know, only communicate through one language where one partner might not be as fluent, then as long as you can figure out a way to make it work, who am I? So I think it can work, but yeah. I also think that there are benefits to learning or speaking the same language.
This comes to mind, the song by Extreme, More Than Words. I guess that was what they were trying to say. Do you know that song? Mm-mm. You know that song.
I don't.
More than words is all I have to do.
Is that from the barbarian era?
That was the war cry after they girded their loins and put up their fisticuffs. And then they sang that as they rushed the enemy.
Right.
It was very romantic back then. Yeah. Ultimately, what it comes down to, more than the actual ability to communicate, I think it comes down to the desire to communicate. Mm. That's really what it comes down to, because even if you speak the same language and you have no desire to understand your partner, of course there's going to be a breakdown. But even if you're speaking different languages, but you have a desire to communicate, then you will find a way, because communication is more than words. The rest of the song doesn't back my theory, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm communicating very well with my eyes. You can see that. Yeah. And it comes down to you. What makes you feel loved? If you need someone to spout 19th century poetry to you every morning to feel loved, then maybe finding someone who speaks that language, that would be poetry. Beneficial. But maybe if that doesn't matter so much to you, then you know what? You can still feel absolutely loved mm-hmm. in other ways.
Very well put.
Yeah. Ultimately, love is the language of the heart. I'm sorry. I tried not to laugh on that. It just sounded so cheesy. When I wrote it down, it looked really pretty. But love is the language of the heart. And you know what that means.
Do I? Oh, God.
We're communicating. Look in my eyes.
Yeah.
But things are, you know.
You after.
Oh, you did catch the message. But you and I, our relationship, we don't speak different languages.
No.
We speak the same languages.
We do. We speak, obviously, English, and we have an understanding of Korean. You speak Korean to me, and
You understand it.
Yeah, and I've spoken less and less Korean over the time we've been together.
I know. From the beginning, I realized in our early conversations, you know, I would message you like, "아 오빠 어디야?" and you'd be like, "Oh, 난 여기 있어." 뭘 그렇게 문자를 보내줬는데, now you don't anymore.
Yeah, which is not good.
It's okay.
But the point is, we're able to communicate in the way that we understand.
Mm-hmm. That's what's keen.
Yeah, I think I think you're, well, I don't know about now, but I think you are an effective communicator, far more effective than me, because I struggle sometimes to communicate how I really feel, but it's a learning process, because I've never had to like talk about my feelings.
So. You do a great job. And, oh, here's another thing. Just as language is a long-term project, takes a lot of time and investment to learn, communication is the same. Takes a long time and you have to invest. But the first step is the desire to communicate. Then it can happen. See? Yeah. Oh man, there's so many love stories out there waiting to happen. Okay, well, we're going to wrap it up here. That
was very, very abrupt.
That was abrupt. But but we want to hear your stories. So if you are in a multilingual relationship, or you guys don't speak the same language and you are in a relationship, let us know how you're doing that. And if you have kids, how are you going to raise them? And how does the communication happen in your own household? We're really, really curious to know. So you can leave a comment if you're watching this video on the YouTube channel, or if you're listening on the podcast, you can send us a message at thehaffyproject@gmail.com. That's all, folks. And we'll catch you next time. Thanks for listening. We are The Haffy Project.